So it's Matthew 5, and we're going to be reading from verse 21. And you'll find it on page 969 of your Not a Pew Bible. Thanks. You have heard it that it was said to the people long ago, "Do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment." But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, "Raca," is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, "You fool," will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary, who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still with him or on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard that it was said, "Do not commit adultery." But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. It has been said, "Anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce." But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for matrimonial unfaithfulness, causes her to become an adulteress. And anyone who marries the divorced woman commits adultery. Amen. So, a nice light one for a Sunday evening, isn't it? There you go. So over the next few weeks in the run-up to the general election, we're looking at Jesus's manifesto. And each week we're taking a topic and comparing it to Jesus' teaching on the Sermon on the Mount. And this week I've been given the nice, easy, straightforward task of tackling the whole of law and order and what that means. Now, I've noticed that all too often when a politician stands up and says anything kind of with any kind of integrity, the press will immediately go and try and dig some dirt on them. So I thought I'd come clean before I say anything this evening, that I'm not without my brushes with the law. And I feel I need to get this off my chest. About a year ago, the most recent one was, and I was driving in Peckham, and I was going towards my home, and two policemen followed me to my house, and when I got out of the car, they questioned me quite thoroughly. And the reason that they were concerned about me as a citizen of this society was that apparently I'd cornered too slowly on the way to my house. How rock and roll is that? Has anyone else been pulled over for going too slowly around a corner? No? Oh yeah, brilliant, well done, hooray. So not just me. So there you go, I've had my brushes with the law. But I think we'd largely be agreed, probably most of the time, except when it catches out for cornering too slowly, that law is a good thing. And all societies, wherever in the world they are, whenever they've been in history, have to have some kind of law and order for them to operate in a social group. As we heard earlier, and we have laws in this country for our own good. It's a democratic process. We agree what we want as a society. And if our society is going to function, if the state's going to operate to give us the things that we need, such as water and food on the table and decent internet connections and all these things the state is essential for, we all have to sign up and agree to follow the laws and order of the land. That's how society functions. And so it may seem strange as we tackle what we think of as law and order to have a passage which incorporates not just murder, which is obviously a no-no, but also looks at divorce and adultery, which are surely matters which are mind your own business, this is my own life, what's the law got to do with that? Well, to unpick a bit about why they're in Jesus' manifesto and why they come under the category of law and order, we need to dive a bit further back into the Old Testament and ask, what kind of society were God's laws first given to? For if you go into the Old Testament, into the books of Exodus and Deuteronomy and Leviticus and Numbers, you'll see all the law laid out to God's people of Israel. And God, in a really specific way, through Moses, gave his people laws. And he gave them laws so they could operate as a society and so things could be worked out. And for all the reasons, we have laws. But there was another reason as well. You see, Israel was unique. It was different to any other society in the history of the world because they had a specific role. They weren't just a society that was meant to operate and provide a stable state for the people within it. They had a specific mission from God to bring about his kingdom. It's a bit like this. You've got your Brio train track, which I'm sure you all, or other brands are available, which you all have around at home, I'm sure. And it's a bit like Israel had their train track in life. God had given them a specific calling, and these are the pieces that he was putting together. For you see, Israel had to have a society that functioned, but they also had to fulfill a God-given calling, that they were going to be God's holy people. They were going to be the way in which he brought about his kingdom in the world. And so Israel had to live God's way. And the means by which God called them to live his way, the way he called them to operate, was to be a community of integrity, living out his love in the world. And the whole idea was Israel would live out God's heart in a really real, practical way. And as the other people, the other nations, looked to that, they'd say, wow, that's something that I want to get involved with. And so, it's a bit like Israel, God's holy people, were this train. And God called them to journey from one place to another. And their call was to journey towards God's kingdom and to be his holy people. And they were meant to journey from one place to another and get into his presence. And as they got towards his presence, that was meant to have an impact on the world. And so they begin to drag carriages behind them, which are the other peoples of the world, as they were drawn to that. So here you have Israel on their train. Choo-choo. Hang on, I've got some trees as well. They're not important for the analogy, I just really like them. So choo-choo, and Israel go along, and isn't that brilliant? And they're heading towards God, and they're getting to know him better, and isn't that an amazing thing? And as they do that, they're pulling other people, as they say, wow, Israel gets who God is. Look at the way he's blessing them. Look at the way they're living out his laws. And as they do that, and we see his blessings come, and we see what perfect society lived out in love looks like. Wow, what an amazing thing. Now, the thing is, when you have laws, is they've got to be there for a reason. And the thing that Israel had with their laws was when they were broken, that had a severe impact, not just on society, but also on their calling to lead people into the presence of God and to bring about his kingdom. And so, if someone went about and decided they were going to murder someone else, a horrendous act, then actually, that disrupted the whole track. Suddenly, the society of God found that because of the wound that murder leaves in people's lives, that they were struggling to get to a place where they could come into God's presence. And because of that, the carriages were nowhere to be seen. There's this gaping hole. And God didn't leave it there, though. He said, look, when one of the laws is broken, if someone murders someone in your community, I'm going to make a way for you to get back. But the way back has two different parts to it. The first thing is, there has to be consequences. When the law is broken and when society breaks down, that leaves a gaping wound. When someone's murdered in any place, that causes hurt and wounding in society. And so there has to be a sense of justice and there has to be consequences for the people involved. But then at the same time, because Israel had a special purpose and their purpose was to be God's holy people, God also said, look, you've got to make this right before me. And so they had this whole process of sacrifices whereby when people did something wrong, they'd have to go and sacrifice a perfect animal. And it's a bit like all the wrongdoing, all the punishment that should have come upon God's people was taken upon that animal. And by this, they could sort of muddle and connect things up again. And it sort of works. It makes sense for murder. We can do that. Okay, murder happens. We look for justice. We try and heal things. There's still pain, but we find a way. But murder wasn't the only issue, the only thing that's covered in the law. There were other things. And of course, one thing that causes huge pain in any society or any social grouping is when faithfulness is abused. And of course, one of the most painful things that could happen in any relationship is for someone to commit adultery. And you see, for Israel, for God's people, unlike us today, this wasn't just a private matter, because they grasped that adultery and a breakdown in relationship and the misuse of sex, which was a gift from God, for different purposes, these things also caused a gaping wound in society. And so once again, if adultery was committed in the community and more of the rail was removed, the train couldn't move into God's presence. Israel was stopped from going towards God. And so again, there'd have to be consequences for actions, and they'd go through the justice system. And you can read about this stuff in Deuteronomy and Leviticus if you're really keen. I'm not going to go into it now. But there you go. But they, again, by coming before God, the community, the society, God's holy people could just about mend the track. And of course, so often when there's a adultery, when there's a breakdown in trust, it can lead to divorce. And to be honest, I'd rather not talk about divorce at all, because it's something that's affected so many of us and is such a horrible, painful subject for so many of us. And yet the Bible talks about divorce, though in the Old Testament law it's quite confusing, and there are all sorts of rabbis debated what it meant. But what we can take as a given is if a relationship broke down, once again, a gaping wound was left in the community of God's people. And there was a gap between where, you're getting the picture by now, but there was a gap between where they were meant to be and the journey they were meant to be going on. And so Israel weren't fulfilling their purposes. And of course, once again, through the law and through following God's instructions, you can kind of patch these things up. But the track's looking a lot wonkier than it was at the start. And the journey's looking a lot more complicated. And the carriages are looking detached from the train. And it's not a particularly pretty picture. All these things, murder, adultery, divorce, and 101 other things, have an impact on the community of God's people, which meant they couldn't fulfill their God-given mission of coming into the presence of God. And more importantly, blessing the whole world and calling them to come onto the adventure as well. And so we see there was a problem. Moving forward from when the law was given by Moses, we come to Jesus, and we come to this point where he lays down his manifesto. And Jesus covers the same things that are covered in the law in all sorts of different ways, as we'll see over the next few weeks. And he chooses these three areas as areas which he wants to dive into and focus on. So first, when thinking about the law and order and societal breakdown and all the pain that these things cause, let's see what Jesus says about murder. Now, there was a popular teaching in the days of Jesus that the Pharisees taught and others bought into as well, that murder was specifically the homicidal act of killing someone in cold blood. A horrendous thing, no doubt. But that act was what the Pharisees and others said, that is the law. Okay, in that we can tick off that bit of the Ten Commandments, do not murder, done it. If I haven't murdered, if I haven't killed anyone, I may have imagined myself doing it, I may have dreamt about doing it, I may have joked about doing it, I may have wanted to do it, but I haven't done it. So my tick sheet is clean. I'm perfectly fine. My train can carry on into the presence of God. I don't need to have any worries. I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm not so bad. This is what so many people brought. So can you imagine their shock and their mild concern when Jesus, in his great manifesto, sits them down and he says, guys, do you know what? I know most of you may not have murdered here, but if any of you have ever lost it and been angry, if any of you have ever shouted at someone, you fool or you idiot, if any of you have publicly, out of a place of anger, questioned someone's character, if anyone in your head or in your heart has wished pain or suffering on someone else, do you know what? That's as bad as murder. Something's wrong. Because what Jesus recognized is it's not just the act of murder which disrupts God's community. It's not just the act of murder which tears apart God's kingdom plans and our hopes come into his presence. The very act of anger, the very thing about holding on to rage, the very thing about holding on to frustration, all these things damage society, all these things get in the way of us being God's kingdom people. Israel failed in their mission of being who God called them to be. And so Jesus was doing a new thing. He was calling us, calling everyone who would follow him and come after him, to be the people who formed that new community. And Jesus was saying to them, guys, if you hold anger against one another, if you don't forgive one another, if you let this rage build up inside you and you don't deal with it, then it's going to have repercussions. And then he goes on to explain, look, if you guys are worshipping together, if you go to church and you're in the middle of, well, I'm paraphrasing, but in the middle of one of those worship songs and you're going for it, and then you remember that the person over there, you've been dreaming about slapping in the face all week, and that's all you can think about. If you know they've wronged you or you know you've wronged them, just stop. Just go and sort it out, because there's no place for this pain and unrest in my community. There's no way we can come into God's presence when you guys are harbouring this. This stuff's equally toxic. Likewise, he goes on to speak about adultery. And the Pharisees and others at the time who followed certain popular rabbis were really big on narrowing the definition of adultery as far as possible. So you can look with your eyes, you can do what you like, you might be able to, if you're not married, visit prostitutes or whatever you want. As long as you don't technically commit adultery, get your tick sheet out. Yes, you've done that one as well. Nailed it. We're fine. We're okay. We're in the clear. But Jesus says, guys, do you know what? That's not good enough. It's not just the act of adultery that tears apart communities, that is going to cause pain in my kingdom community. Do you know what's going to cause pain and suffering? Do you know what's going to cause division and stop you being the people I'm calling you to be? It's this whole lust issue. It's this whole thing about what you look at and what you think about. It's not just the action of adultery that's some sort of tick list that you need to not fall into. When you look at something on your phone which you know makes you fantasize, when you hold on to those thoughts in your heads, and I know he's focusing on speaking to blokes in this, but this applies to women as well. When you start fantasizing about people you know, you have that second look at someone, when you begin to lust, then actually all this stuff causes division in God's community. So we stop seeing each other as God's holy people. We stop seeing each other as people made in God's image, and we begin to see each other as objects or less than the amazing people God's made us to be. And so, 2,000 years ahead of his time, Jesus condemns pornography. He condemns lust. He condemns fantasy. He condemns all this stuff and says, look, this stuff is toxic. There's no place for it in my community. And then he goes on to talk about divorce. And if anyone's ever experienced divorce in any way, shape or form, you all know the thing about divorce when relationships break down is there are no winners. There's no good that comes out of it. And even in the most civilized divorce, the most civilized breakup, there is still pain and there is still hurt. And you can check out Matthew 19 when Jesus unpacks a bit more about his teaching about divorce. But the key thing here is what he's addressing and the issues that the Pharisees and others have bought into. You see, when he quotes here at the start of verse 31, he says, it has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. He's not here quoting scripture as it was written. He's paraphrasing Deuteronomy 24, and he's paraphrasing it the way that the Pharisees and other rabbinical teachers and others, teachers of the law, had decided it should be paraphrased. And in fact, there was this rabbi who was the popular teacher at the time called Rabbi Hillel. And he was one of the main schools of thought. And he was the one which the Pharisees and others bought into. And he interpreted a reason for divorce as not just being adultery, but what he phrased as something unseemly. And then Rabbi Hillel went on to interpret something unseemly as anything which may upset the man about the woman. So if your dinner was burned, then that was something unseemly. That was grounds for divorce. You could leave your woman and go after someone else. Never mind about looking after her or having her back or all the things you promised to her. Or if she got older and got less attractive and you found someone else more attractive, well, that's something unseemly. That's grounds for divorce. So what Jesus is saying here is, guys, I don't want to talk about divorce. You're arguing backwards and forwards about logistics. What can I do to get away with this so I can keep my tick sheet clean? You're missing the whole point. Yes, he says in Matthew 19, Moses allowed divorce, but he didn't do so because anything good comes from it. He did it because your hearts are hard, and sometimes, tragically, painfully, it seems to be the only way which a relationship can end when it comes to that point. But Jesus says, do you know what? That's not my heart. That's not my heart. And I find it fascinating, both in Mark and Matthew's gospel, when Jesus unpacks divorce in more detail, he always follows it immediately by welcoming little children to come to him and saying the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. And the thing to remember as we unpack murder and divorce and adultery is it's always the most vulnerable who suffer in these situations. And it's always the most vulnerable who are left hurting the most. So here's the situation we're sort of left with. We know the kingdom God's calling us into, and we know what his presence is like. And we know that if we followed the Pharisees' approach to the law, we may just be able to do it. We may hiccup there or there, here or there, but our tick sheet will generally be clean. But Jesus says something completely different. He says, guys, if you think you've got it sorted, if you think just because you haven't actually murdered or you haven't actually committed adultery, your track is clear for you to move towards me, you're so wrong. Because the thing is, when you look at pornography and think about someone in that way, or when you think angry thoughts about someone, or when you get frustrated and hold anger against someone within my community, when relationships begin to break down and things aren't done about it, you're left with this gaping chasm which just can't be filled. And I can keep trying to put these bricks in there, but eventually I'm going to run out until we've got nothing left to fill the gap to be the people God's calling us to be. And so we're left with a problem. And here's where the really amazing bit comes in. We're called to be God's holy people. We're called to lead others into his kingdom, to offer them a taste of his presence, of his hope, of his life, of his forgiveness, of his healing, of all the good things that he's called us into. He calls us to offer love to the loveless, hope to the hopeless. He promises us that he'll always be with us. And yet we can see that we can't do this on our own. And we get to a point in life, if you're anything like me, where you realise you've messed up too much and you've run out of wooden blocks and there's no way that you can possibly get there on your own. And it's at that moment when God goes into his box and he says, do you know what? Do you know what? I expect more of you than you could ever possibly imagine, and yet I love you more than you could ever comprehend, and I know that you're going to mess up and you won't always get it right, and that's why I gave you this. Because the one thing that can plug the gap between who we are and the mess we make and the relationship with God that he's calling us into is the cross of Christ. And so he lays it down, and we find that somehow it connects us with who we are meant to be. And there's nothing we can do to deserve it, and yet he offers it anyway. And there are two things about the cross that we have to comprehend, that we have to grasp tonight, if we're ever going to move forward to being the people God's calling us into, and as we seek to invite people into that kingdom as well. And these two things are this. The first is that the cross loses all of its power. It loses all of its authority when we attempt to get all the way over here by self-justification. You see, we all do it. I do it all the time. Oh, at least I'm not as bad as him over there. I haven't murdered. I may be angry, but I'm probably okay because I didn't do that. Or, well, I haven't committed adultery, so I'm probably fine with God. I'm not like that person over there. And yes, I may be struggling with pornography, but hey, who doesn't? And that's fine. I'm sure God will let me off. He's all love anyway, isn't he? Or I may be struggling with, fantasizing about people, but at least I'm not actually technically looking at anything, so I'm probably okay. Or yes, I may be in a relationship that I know is not where it's meant to be, and I know my marriage may not be what God's calling it to be, but I can't face healing it, and we're all struggling, and none of us are perfect, so at least I'm not like those celebrities over there who did that. You see, the thing with self-justification is it denies there's a problem, and the cross has no authority where we try and fill that gap ourselves. And yet, here's the second thing about the cross of Christ. If we let it, it has all the power in the world to heal our communities. It has all the power in the world to lead you, no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, into a relationship with God, which means you can live a life which doesn't just bless you, but allows his blessing to pour out to all that you meet. Isn't that amazing? So here, I think, is something of what Jesus is saying in the Sermon on the Mount. Guys, you've heard it said, don't murder. Amen to that. But I'm asking you, as my new community, as the people I'm calling to journey with me, if you hold anything against anyone in this community I'm setting up, in this project that we're doing, this journey that we're going on as God's holy people seeking his kingdom, then I'm asking you to lay it down and bring it before my cross. If you're feeling any exasperation or frustration at your brothers or sisters in Christ, if they do your nutting, I'm asking you to bring it to my cross. If you struggle with pornography, and if you struggle with lusting, and if you struggle with sex and relationship and all that stuff, I'm not saying that's okay. I'm saying bring it to my cross. Lay it down, and my cross will be enough to you. And as you bring it to my cross, maybe you can share with others. Maybe you can find others in my community who will journey with you, who will help you. But the first step is, bring it to my cross, because I'm calling you into something better. Are your relationships falling? Is your marriage not where you want it to be? Is your family struggling? God acknowledges that's really rubbish. But he also says, bring it to my cross. And if your marriage is ever in a place where it's struggling, then if both of you bring it to my cross together, if you seek the help of others in the church, if you go and get counselling, if you do what you can, I'll be with you as we try and sort this out together. But please don't give up. Bring it to my cross. It will be enough for you. I promise. We're not always going to get it right. There'll be times when we're angry. There'll be marriages within the church that tragically fail. And there'll be times when we get frustrated with our partners. There'll be times when we're really frustrated with each other. And yet what Jesus asks us to do is to be a community that's journeying towards him. And as we do that, others will join in as well. And they'll see there's something different about us. And they'll catch a glimpse of God. And they'll want to be a part of it. And isn't that amazing? We're not always going to get it right. But the times we do and the things we struggle with repeatedly, Jesus doesn't say they don't matter. He doesn't say compare yourself with someone worse and I'll let you off the hook. He says deal with it. Bring it to the cross. Come on a journey with me. And let's change this world together. My kingdom's so much greater than you could ever imagine. And I'm calling you to be a part of it. So what we're going to do now, I'm going to invite the band to come back up. And as they do, there's a cross in the middle of the back of the back of church at the moment, and at the foot of it is a box of bits of Brio, and what I'm going to invite you to do, and I'm going to do this first, is at any point in the next couple of songs, as your response to this, why not go up, take a piece of Brio, and attach it to the pieces that's already down there. And that is a sign that we're going to journey together as a church community into God's kingdom. It's a sign for some of us that we're laying down our attempts to self-justify and we're acknowledging our need for the cross as we seek to journey with him. For some of us, it might be a symbol of laying down the stuff that's hindered us for so long, be it failed relationships, be it lust, be it anger. Come and lay it down on the cross and lay some track and ask God once again to help you journey towards him with the rest of us. I'm going to do that as the music starts. I invite the rest of you at any point when you're ready, come and join me. And let's journey towards God together. Amen.